Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Today's the day we do Mythbusters, and, you know, our co-host is Chris Rossini. Hey, Chris, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. Great to be with you.
Good. Before we get started, I wanted to make a brief announcement. An exciting event occurred today, a number for us that shows that we're reaching more people, and that is the number of subscribers on our YouTube channel is up to over 75,000. And this is very good because it's going to help us finance this channel, although we haven't done a whole lot of that yet. We expect to do that. And I think this is very important. So anybody that would like to see our success, share our program with other people, because we're really excited about the growth. The growth curve is very interesting and very positive. And Chris, for today's program, understand we might talk a little bit about gold, and we have to try to decide whether gold is money or not.
Yes, gold actually is money, has been money for thousands of years. And although it may be a little strange for people to realize, it wasn't too long ago that gold was the international medium of exchange. And the world experienced economic growth like it has never seen before. The common myth is that gold failed as money, but we're going to bust that myth today because, in fact, it was the U.S. government who, over many decades, weaned Americans off of real money and got us onto Federal Reserve notes. So the Fed was founded in 1913, and it was World War I that got the ball really rolling. So, Dr. Paul, start us right there.
Well, yes, and the general understanding of history is that wars are never fought from savings. The people don't donate the money, or they're not willing to be taxed. It's always financed. War is always financed by either taxation, which the people end up resisting. So most of the time, it's financed through inflation. That is the creation of new money. So the Federal Reserve is very instrumental. It's interesting how quickly they got that war going, you know, after 1913 and World War One. In the very older days, when the gold was the money, wars were fought by the confiscation of gold of other countries back in Roman Empire times. And now it's a little bit more sophisticated. It is through the printing press that they are able to create this credit. But I'm amazed about the history of this time after the Fed was created in 1913. Even in early 1914, even before the very first meeting of the Fed, they were anxious to get the Fed started because there was a lot of financial activity going on because the war had already started in Europe, and there was a lot of buying of goods from America and a lot of financial things going on, and they were anxiously waiting for the Fed in early 1914 to be involved. Well, they were involved for, you know, those 4 years until, you know, of course, 3 years in 1917 when we got involved. But it was, you know, literally suspending the gold standard, just as they did in the Civil War period, just as we even did, you know, in the Revolutionary time when we had the Continental Dollar. We inflated that and destroyed that currency. Civil War, we had the greenback period. The populist movement just printed greenbacks, and that didn't work, but we reversed that trend. But in World War One, there was a lot of inflation. During that period of time, prices doubled. Prices were going up. But the interesting thing is we were in a unique position because we weren't involved in the war at the beginning, and people were buying stuff from us. Gold was coming in, which allowed us to, you know, the prices would be inflated just from that. And people were buying these goods and services, and we loaned a lot of money. And that whole thing, as it transpired through World War One, set the stage for the pound to be removed as the reserve currency of the world. So the British pound then faded as the dollar became stronger. But World War One was fought with inflation. There's no doubt about that. And the interesting thing is, even then, the rules of the Austrian school prevailed that said, you know, when you inflate, you have to have a correction. And lo and behold, right after World War One, not immediately, but by 1920-21, the correction had to come. Prices crashed. There was deflationary pressures. But guess what the Fed didn't do? They didn't bail out everybody, and they actually initiated the fall because they raised interest rates, and they considered that a lesson to be learned in the Depression. Oh, that was bad because that really brought that severe depression on. But what they won't recognize and continue not to recognize is that basically the Congress and the Fed were, compared to today, they were hands off, and it was severe. And the downturn was sharp, lasted a year. And then it was gone again. And then the Fed went back to printing, and they went back to work. And then we had deflationary times of the 20s, which ushered in the depression of the 1930s. But wartime, they always inflate. They always spend. And you think, well, is it the war that makes it convenient for the monetary shenanigans to go on? Or do they change the shenanigans and change the rules and set the stage so they can fight their wars? When you look at this history, it looks like they almost prepared to go to war and set this up. At least it worked into their plans. They changed the rules on monetary policy, gave so much power, you know, to the Federal Reserve to do these things. And then, you know, they ended up, you know, bailing out everybody, running up debt, increasing the inflation. And of course, you know, it was the war to end all wars. Everybody was euphoric, and we went into the war, and it was quickly over. So nobody would say, oh, that was terrible, you know, that the Fed financed that war. Well, it would have been a lot better off for the world, because that was the war that led to other problems throughout the century. But eventually, you know, even though they didn't suspend the gold standard, they ignored it. So they did what they want, and the Fed did whatever they wanted. But eventually in the 20s and all, they recognized that that people were still allowed to own gold. The American people were allowed to own gold, at least for another decade until Roosevelt came in. So there was those individuals who believed in the welfare warfare state. The seeds were all planted in 1913. They also knew that they had to have monopoly control over the monetary system, being able to expand and shrink at will, because that's how they could finance the war and also introduce this notion to the welfare system. Of course, in the early stages, or if you win a war, people, well, we can't argue with that. This was a benefit. But the whole thing is, if it had stuck to their guns and stuck with the gold standard, we wouldn't have the problems that we face today. It was the introduction of totally ignoring, you know, sound money and getting rid of the restraints that the Federal Reserve should provide, or the gold standard provides, for restraining government growth. That's the most important part of the gold standard, as well as economic growth, which should please everybody.
Yes, next, the ball was rolling, so we're gonna move to World War II and FDR, and they would strike another major blow against gold as money. We're all familiar with Ben Bernanke's famous helicopter money quote from not too long ago, and he brags about the printing press. Well, the U.S. Treasury Secretary from back then, William Wooden, said the following: the Federal Reserve Act lets us print all we need, and it won't frighten the people. It won't look like stage money. It'll be money that looks like real money. So, Dr. Paul, FDR and World War II, please talk about that.
Right. They had benefit, and they wanted to benefit by reinstating the principles that they used in World War I, even though they drifted back to trying to follow gold. You know, the Depression prompted Roosevelt to take the people off the gold standard. You couldn't buy gold. And, you know, I remember most of my lifetime, or a significant part of it, we weren't allowed to own gold. We could have silver, but up until 1975, until gold was renewed, this gave license to the spending and big government and war. Now, during World War I, they had Liberty Bonds, and there was a significant amount of money, but people never give the government enough money and loan it to the government enough to finance the war. It's sort of a conditioning. It's a psychological thing. World War II, I can remember it very clearly, that we as kids on our newspaper routes, we would go and collect quarters and dimes and nickels and put them in a little folder and try to work up to a $25 which would have been an $18 bond, and we were doing, you know, this great service to finance the war. But the real financing was the massive monetary inflation, much more so in World War II than in World War I. But they had to have the monopoly control of the money. So they weren't allowed to own the gold. It was a little bit easier to move into the unlimited amount of inflation. And once again, do they change the rules in order to fight the war? Or is the war started and then they have to resort to it? And it might be a little bit of each. Let's have it in place because maybe we need a little war here and there. Maybe we don't want one as big as World War II, but we might need to bomb a few countries here and a few countries there, and we'll just run up a debt. So wars are dependent on inflation, and gold has been put on the back burner. And, you know, I can remember clearly when I asked Bernanke, is gold money? And he paused. He says, no. So I challenged him whether or not, you mean you can repeal 6,000 years of history? And he's mumbled sort of something, yes. And I said, well, why do you guys in the central bank hold the gold then if you've repealed the gold standard? Well, tradition. I said, why don't you hold diamonds or some other commodity? And the answer, of course, is what he was evading, that gold is money, and I even said that in committee. It's not because I say it's money. I can't make gold money, but history can make gold money, and human instincts can. And you can still have modern, financial transactions, you know, with computers and all, but you still have to have, you know, a definition of what the monetary unit is. And right now, there is no definition. The market says there is. And those who think that gold has failed, all they have to do is look and say, well, you know, if in 1971 is when I was really starting to look at this, that if you'd have taken $10,000 in cash and put it in a box, or $10,000 worth of gold and put it in a box, if you go back and compare that $10,000 in gold is astronomically huge compared to that $10,000 that went shrunk. It's probably down to $1,000 worth of purchasing power, and gold might be hundreds of times of greater value. But they will continue to bash it. And one thing that's interesting is the shift in attitude. When the debates were going on over the Spanish-American War, the industrialists and the bankers even were very much against Bryan, William Jennings Bryan, because he wanted to inflate with silver, and they were adamant. No, that was inflationary, and they believed strongly in the gold standard. And if you didn't believe in the gold standard, you were a really oddball. But now it's reversed. The banks and the businessmen think that the gold standard is the craziest thing ever. But economic laws still exist out there. Deficit financing all have consequences. Stupid foreign policies have consequences. Still, as a runaway welfare state has consequences. But the one thing is, they will lose the argument that gold is no longer relevant. It's still looked at every single day. And I've talked to a few economists that would lead in our direction. When you wake up in the morning, what do you look at? The price of gold, because it is a bellwether, but it's not going to be instantaneous. You know, you might have to look at it for 10 or 15 or 20 years. You know, in 1971, if anybody would have told us, even have told me in 1971, that gold would, you know, go up to $1,800 and down to $1,200 and get ready to go into $3,000, we couldn't have believed it could have been that bad, but it keeps going along. But that is the store of value, and that is where monetary policy will eventually retreat to, and it won't be because the politicians decide it's a good idea. It will be decided by economic laws, and finally, when people, for practical reasons, will start using gold and silver again.
Yes, and speaking of 1971, that's our next topic. And by this time, Americans were off of gold domestically. So just to point out, gold did not fail. This was a government operation here. And 1971 would be the coup de grace, because it was at that time that Nixon would shut out foreigners from even cashing in their dollars for gold. So, Dr. Paul, talk about 1971 and how it led us to the situation we face today.
Yeah, the destruction of the standard that we follow here was incremental from the very first year, 1914, on and on with the creation of the Fed. That was the whole thing. In 1933 was the destruction and the elimination of the gold standard domestically because, the American people couldn't own gold. And 1971 was the end of the international gold standard. So even though we have been the powerhouse economically and militarily, which does bestow some confidence in the paper, so we were able to continue to do that. Eventually, foreign aid and foreign adventures and fighting wars and everything that we were doing overseas, we were printing a lot of money, and people knew even by 1968, this isn't going to work. The American people turned against General de Gaulle because he was the Frenchman, and he said, hey, you guys are printing money like crazy, and he still believed in the gold standard. So they were doing very bad things to America. They were actually sending greenbacks, dollars back to America and taking their gold out, and that made a lot of Americans mad because that was an insult to us. But that was when it was known that it would fail. In 1933, Nixon announced, we don't have enough gold. We have to have a little bit left over just in case gold really is money. So he closed the gold window so no more gold could go out. And that just turned on, the printing presses. I think it's interesting, anytime you get a chance to look at a chart, go back whether it's deficits or regulation, size of government, money supply, or the cost of living, and look at from 71 up until the current age, and it's exponential. It just skyrockets. It's all related to the fact that it's the destruction of the value of the money, and that is, to me, very important. Now, with all that said, and us going in the wrong direction, actually, there was one significant event that has helped the American people. It has helped gold. It helped the understanding because, ironically, in the 1970s, early 70s, at the height of the Cold War, there were only two countries in the world that you weren't allowed to own gold, and that was the Soviets and Americans. But in 75, with the effort of many of the people who, like myself, believed in gold, gold was re-legalized where the American people could buy gold. And Henry Royce, who was the chairman of the banking committee, he says, oh, it was guaranteed that you could always get $35 an ounce. And Royce was, he wasn't exactly an automatic endorser of the Federal Reserve, but he hated gold. He was a populist in the sense that Congress gets to print the money. So he made this prediction. He says, you can't do this. If you do that, you know what's going to happen? Gold will go to $5 an ounce. And everybody laughed at him. So it didn't quite do that. The gold standard was finally ended. And then, of course, we're at this stage now where the value of the dollar is artificially high, and we have already been watching the cracks, and the ultimate crack will be prices are going to go up, and we're in the midst of the early stages of stagflation. That's going to continue to get worse.
Yes, finally, Dr. Paul, let's try to end on a positive note here. We've shown that gold has not failed, that government took us off, and it has produced a century of wars, world wars, Cold Wars, Vietnam, Middle East, and a massive welfare state. Now, ultimately, this will have a happy ending, and that's what we'll talk about. And before you get to your thoughts here, I'm going to read a quote from Gilbert Chesterton. He said, "The golden age only comes to men when they have forgotten gold." I think we're there, Dr. Paul. Please take it away.
Yes, and that is the case. When everybody thinks it's gone and dead and buried, it comes back, because that's what people have resorted to over the centuries. The big empires, huge empires of ancient times, the Roman Empire, all of them ended when the gold standard ended. And I remember a conversation I had with President Reagan, and I had a one-on-one visit with him because I was leaving a meeting with the Gold Commission, and we were flying in a helicopter, and he knew I was interested in gold, and he actually himself was interested and didn't think it was that practical at this time. But he says, any great nation that has gone off the gold standard no longer remains great. And I remember that, and that's a pretty close quote. So he understood that, and that is true, that some of the great empires that had listed, like the Byzantine Empire, I think it was 1,000 years or so, they had the Byzant, which was gold, and it was the currency of the world, and it lasted until they started diluting that value. That time will come back. The laws are there. People want things of real value. And when that comes, I think there will be a restoration of freedom, because it was the goal to spend money carelessly and without work and hard effort by just printing it with a monopoly control that they have been doing this. And now, if we go back to better times, because this system is going to fail, as I've said so many times, that what do you do to have restore confidence? Have something of real value that the politicians can't print and live within our means. You know, some of the old-fashioned rules, yes, they will come back, but it'll have to come back with a lot more education. A whole generation has to understand what's going on. But it can shift rather quickly, just as the downside can go pretty fast. I think the upside can say, hey, look, this doesn't work. What do we need to do? And they'll sit down and decide that what we need is restoration and the confidence in money, and therefore it has to have something of real value. That's what we should be dealing with. The founders tried to do that when they said nothing but gold and silver can be used as legal tender, which we have totally ignored. So it's out there. The seeds have been around, and this is nothing new in history. And my intense interest in the gold standard is that I have an intense interest in liberty. And you cannot preserve liberty if you have a central bank printing money and allowing the control to be in the very wealthy, in the banks and the politicians. That is a bad situation, but it'll be reversed, and that's what we have to strive for. We have to understand our goals and then work for them. But Chris, I want to thank you very much today for being with us on this special program on Gold is Money.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
Very good. And I want to thank our audience for being with us today. And please come back soon to the Ron Paul Liberty Report.